Welcome to this episode of The Golden Gang, a podcast that introduces you to the inside of our senior living community through the eyes of professionals that are here every day. My name is Christina. I'm the Director of Engagement here at Arbor Terrace Norwood. Every month, we sit down with some of the most fascinating people who call this place home, the kind of individuals whose experiences and wisdom speak to a life well lived. In each conversation, we dive into topics that matter most: health, wellness, hobbies, travel, adventures that leave lasting memories. So grab a seat, get comfortable, and join us for a conversation filled with wisdom, laughter, and perhaps a new perspective on how to embrace your journey ahead. Welcome again, everyone, to our recording of The Golden Gang. Today is November 17th, 2025, and my name is Christina. As you all know me, the Director of Engagement. I am interviewing Brian Parks.
That is correct.
Yes! Welcome, Brian.
Thank you.
Brian is our superstar, and thought you might want to learn a little more about Brian.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
His journey to Arbor
yes.
and beyond.
Yes.
Which we don't ever want him to leave. So, right, Brian?
Well, everyone's very kind to me.
We want to keep you. All right. So, Brian, just tell us. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. But where did you grow up, Brian? Tell me.
Well,
where I
grew up. Well, I was actually born in the Bronx, called the Bronx. How about that?
A lot of us were born in the Bronx.
But I actually didn't grow up there. No, my dad was a car salesman at the time. He sold cars in the Bronx, but we lived and grew up in Palisades Park, New Jersey, which is not too far from here, Bergen County. Anybody know Powell Park? No, there's no applause for Powell Park, I noticed.
Just the Bronx.
The Bronx.
We love the Bronx. So how old were you when you moved from the Bronx? Because you said you were born in the Bronx.
Well, I was born in the Bronx. You know what it is? My father was born in the Bronx. My mom was born in Manhattan. And they were New Yorkers their whole life, but my father lived in the Bronx and they had a lot of connections there, but I did not, I never lived there.
I lived in Palisades Park
until I was about 11.
Ah, okay.
And then we moved to Oradell, New Jersey, which is not too far.
Oh, okay.
Then we moved to Toms River, New Jersey.
We know where.
Okay.
And then I went from Toms River to Montclair. I went to school in Montclair State in Montclair. And
Montclair State.
I've stayed up north since then.
That's a nice area. Montclair is super nice. Well, it sounds like you lived in a lot of nice places.
Kind of bounced around New Jersey. But yet again, there's still places in New Jersey you never hear of.
Yeah,
I don't know. That I've never heard of.
But, a lot of places you still need to go see.
Yes.
Okay. So I have a couple of questions about your upbringing. And so do you have any siblings, Brian?
Yes.
Okay.
That's all I got. No.
That's all you got.
No.
Yes.
I have, my parents were actually married before they met each other. So I have half brothers and half sisters.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
My mom had one daughter and my dad had four children.
Okay.
And then they, got divorced and they married each other and they had me and my brother.
Like the Brady Bunch?
Kind of like the Brady Bunch,
Oh,
yes.
Right. So was there three boys and three girls?
There were three girls and four boys.
All right. So plus the Brady Bunch. Okay. You guys remember the Brady Bunch?
Yeah.
All right.
So
you all live together?
No. I grew up with one. My full-blooded brother is the one I grew up with. Yeah.
Okay.
They were all born in like the mid to late 50s and early 60s. Mm-hmm. The older ones.
So they're older than.
So they're
you
older.
Are.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I have one brother that I palled around with there, who's married with four children. How about that?
Oh, God bless. Okay, four children. Wonderful. And you went to Montclair State for what? Did you study?
Theater.
Surprise.
Yes.
No surprise, actually.
Went to study theater.
Surprise.
How about that?
We're so shocked.
Which means I turned out to be a waiter, really, is what happened. Went to school for theater there and studied acting and improv, mm-hmm. comedy, kind of. You learned a lot of different things all about not just the program that we had. You learned, backstage stuff too, stage managing, different parts of the shows, fight choreography, things like that, directing, and, very fun, very exciting thing, if you're into that.
So you've been in the acting realm for 20 years,
yeah.
maybe? Okay, so what has been one of your biggest challenges in that field?
Getting work. let's start there. You know, it's a very interesting world. I guess everybody, like, it's funny. I never knew about this whole world here,
right.
You know, which I know we'll get to. But
you
I
fit in really well.
I went to, while I was in school there, the hardest thing about acting or acting gigs, you always hear actors say that they do waitering, wait tables and stuff, because the hardest thing is getting the time to go out and audition, or if you're in a show or whatever it is, you need to be able to get out of work,
right.
You know. So I worked in restaurants many years, like 15 years or so. I was in different restaurants, waiting tables, bartending, and all that, so that I could. It's easier to navigate your schedule to mm-hmm. do a lot of that stuff. And I started out basically. My mom and dad raised us on the old movies, as a lot of you know. And what it was for me was watching Laurel and Hardy. Is what I and the Three Stooges, that kind of thing. I always wanted to make people laugh. So my brother and I started doing sketch comedy stuff when we were in high school. We would do it at talent shows.
Oh, cool.
We'd write stupid sketch stuff and get on stage and do stuff like that. And then I wanted to play football, but my mom said no.
Moms try to protect their kids.
She saved me because I'm a number two pencil. I would have got murdered there. So I went into the theater there, and I did shows in high school. And I was not really a singer, but I did South Pacific in high school. I played Captain Brackett. It's not a singing role, but I stumbled into things like that.
So you were always into the high school plays and things like that. What about when you were younger? Did you do little shows for your mom when you were like two?
No, you know what? When I was young, I was the shyest person in the world.
Okay.
I didn't do it. It wasn't about like eighth grade. My mom came home from like a parent-teacher meeting, and she was like, "What is this? All of a sudden, you have a sense of humor."
What happened?
Just came out of my shell, I guess. I don't know.
So, with that said, did someone inspire you? Is there something you remember about being inspired at that age, or like your self-confidence grew? Like, is there a turning point?
I don't know if there was any specific signal thing. I feel like it was just I don't know what it was. That's a great question, actually. I feel like I kind of just. Like I said, me and my brother were so into the old, specifically the old comics,
mm-hmm.
Abbott and Costello, the Marx Brothers. We loved all that, and I feel like we wanted to make people laugh. We started with our mom and dad trying to make them laugh, and then we started to make a little home movies. We got into the old Universal monster movies like Boris Karloff and all that. So the first movie my brother and I made was called The Ape Man, and the idea was every time this guy saw a banana, he turned into an ape.
Oh, any copies of this movie?
Oh, what's that?
Do you have any copies of this movie?
So I'm so aggravated by this. We did it on VHS.
Man. Right.
But somehow over the, and we used to rewatch because it was just so, it's hilarious to see yourself.
I want to see
but
that.
We wound up recording over the first half of it. So we're so mad about that. The second half is still on a video cassette somewhere. But
we want to see it.
I know. I'll have to bring okay. it in. But we did a lot of that stuff like that. And then, like I said, went into high school. And the thing about college, the college I went to has only gotten better.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that they asked was, what could we improve on? And a lot of us in the school were saying the business side of show business,
right.
You know, which is a lot of stuff that I didn't want to do. Who wants to do that? Like, I didn't go to school
marketing?
To be a secretary, because a lot of it is selling yourself.
Sure, sure.
Which I don't like to do. I don't, you know, which you kind of have to.
Yeah,
I don't like to, like, you know, right. I want to be involved in the show and entertaining people. But a lot of it is, you know, getting your headshots done and sending them out and emailing, looking for auditions and searching for that. I'm like, can I pay someone to do that?
Yeah.
I can't because I have no money. So,
all right.
But there is a lot of that. And there's a whole world of that. And when I first started going out on auditions for theater, for example, if you want to get into some professional theaters, I was a non-union actor. So you have to go, I would go into New York City if I wanted to audition for a show in New York. They have to see the union, the act. If you're on the stage or in Actors Equity, they have to see them first by contract.
Right.
So I would sit there from 9 in the morning or 8 in the morning till 5:30 at night, and they would say, "All right, that's it for the day." Then you go home and you don't even get seen.
Like jury duty.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So I got tired of that. Obviously, it's very, very tiring.
Right.
So what happened to me? I'll try to make this quick. But my a director I had worked with in New Jersey was doing a show at this place called The Growing Stage in Netcong, New Jersey, which is still around. But they used to give out equity points you could get towards your contract, but they also would give out equity contracts if you had a certain size role. So they offered me and one of my buddies the contract, and I said, yes, I'm going to take that. So I took that. Now I was able to go into the city and audition and sign up and not have to wait around all day.
That's good.
And I saw one audition that I saw was for a show called Dead End, which was an old Humphrey Bogart movie. I'll have to bring that in for you guys. But it starred these young kids who wound up getting the nickname the Dead End Kids, who eventually became the Bowery Boys. And I loved the movie, and I saw this theater was auditioning for that. I said, I'm going to go in for that. And I went in and I got in and I did the show. But I've been a member of this company. It's called Axis Company. They're in the Village. So that was in 2017. So I've been with them since. I've been doing shows with them every year. I usually do a holiday show every year, but this year we have a baby on the way. So I had
we'll
to say,
we'll come to that in a little bit. Yes. Okay.
So now I'm in the actor's equity for the stage. So I cannot do community theater now. I have to be paid for theater work. But I am not in the SAG, the Screen Actors Guild for Film and TV. I'm trying to get in. I technically could join, but some people say don't join unless you're getting, you know, decent auditions in that realm, which I'm not really getting. I have an agent that I work with, but I'm not really signed with him. He's very nice, but he sends me on like small commercial auditions, but
nice.
Nothing really meaty for like
nothing meaty
film and TV just yet. But we're trying.
Okay, well, we're happy that you're here with us. How did you end up here?
So funny enough, my first job when I was in high school, my first job was in a Burger King. And I met my buddy Phil there, and we've been friends since. So this is like the mid-90s.
Mm.
And his fiance is Angel, who is high up in the department there. So what happened was, basically, when the pandemic happened, the restaurants closed. And my goal was to try to not go back, because I was tired of waiting tables and everything. And obviously, there was no theater going on. But I started driving Uber, and I loved it. Because you can make your own hours, you know, you're driving around people. It was every day was an adventure. And what I liked about it, too, was that I could do that when my wife was working as a teacher. You know, at that time they were doing Zoom, but she's working all day from home, basically. But I would be out. And then when she was done work, I would finish driving. I would come home, you know. But then the money started to decline. I wasn't making as much money as I was initially. And you're running your car into the ground, which is a whole other thing.
I was tired of burying my car there.
So I was looking for a different kind of driving jobs, and I happened to mention to Phil had mentioned that there's a driver position open in Arbor Terrace in Morris Plains. So I went to Morris Plains. This is like last whatever it was, March or April or something like that. Yeah. And I went in for one day to follow around, and the second when I went to go back, they said, actually our driver's coming back, so we can't use you here.
Oh.
I said, all right. So then a couple of months went by, and then Angel said, there's a spot up in Norwood if you want to come up here. I said, yes. So I came up here, and here I am.
Lucky us. Lucky us.
We're here.
I'm going to go back to your Uber days real quick. Have you met anyone famous in Uber?
The time doing background on movies and stuff, I've gotten a chance to meet different people. Idris Elba, I don't know if some of you guys know some of these people. Clive Owen, some of the Law & Order people. I did some Law & Order. But again, I'm always in the background. There was one show I got a chance to do. It was called The Nick. On Cinemax, and I think they still have it out there. It's K-N-I-C-K. It was about the medical field first coming in to being. And they shot in Brooklyn for 2 weeks. And I had just broken up with a girl at the time, and I was down and out. And I'm like, you know what? I got out of the restaurant. I was like, I'll stay here. Just keep bringing me back. And I was a pedestrian in the background. And then they had a thing where one of the people saw my picture in the for the... when you get your costume, they have your picture hanging up. Somehow they pulled my picture and said, we want you to be a reporter in this one scene.
Oh, cool.
I said, okay, cool. So they had four of us be reporters, and the director of this was a guy named Steven Soderbergh, and he came over with the assistant director. They said, we're going to interview you guys about your acting experience. So they interviewed a few of us. Out of the four, they gave me and another guy a couple of lines of dialogue in the scene.
Nice.
So we got a chance. Now this bumped up my pay and all this other nonsense. It's amazing. There's so much money in TV and and the film thing.
Sure.
But that made me eligible to join SAG if I wanted to, and which I think is like $3,500 to join.
Is it?
And then you have to pay union dues twice a year, which I did for the theater. So I paid at the time when I joined, it was $1,800 for Actors Equity, and then you pay union dues twice a year, which is like $80 or $90. So it's not so bad, but.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you get royalties for all those every time they play them?
You know what's funny? So again, I'm not as versed as I probably should be in a lot of this, but not when you're an extra, you do not get that.
Oh, that's a bummer. Okay.
But for the Nick, I do.
For the Nick? That's cool.
Because I had a few lines on the screen. But what's funny
so
was...
So should we rent it? Then you get extra money?
I don't know where you could stream it, but there's one episode that I was on. I was in one episode where I had the line. But what's funny was... They did the scene, and I felt like the camera had great shots of us. Me and my friend, I don't remember him, but he was a friend of mine at the time doing the scene. Then they said, can you guys come back tomorrow? We said, yes. So we came back tomorrow, and they shot the scene kind of a different way. So in the scene, you see me on the side of the screen, but you don't get like a real good shot
of
me. But what's funny is, so I used to get checks in the mail. These residual things are ridiculous because the checks come in the mail and they're like, you know, $1.85.
Like the Seinfeld episode,
yes,
where he's got like 10 cents.
It is,
for
it is totally, totally like
got.
That. Okay. Although I will say that this was a while ago now, but I would say within the first year, I did get a check one time for $350
nice.
For an overseas showing. They showed it overseas or something like that. And that was it. That was the one time. Ever since then, it's been 10 cents. But I still get them now and then. It's like crazy.
Hey,
they come
not?
In.
Money's
like,
you know, money. Yeah. You can never refuse money. All right. Well, that's pretty interesting. What's a challenge that you've faced in your lifetime that's made you a stronger person?
Wow. That's we're getting deep here.
We're going deep, you know, people. going deep.
Well, I would say something that I'm sure everyone in this room has experienced is a loss. You know,
sure.
So I was 24 when actually, believe it or not, I've dabbled in the world of stand-up comedy as well. And I don't know if you got, I don't know if anybody here remembers a guy named Uncle Floyd.
Oh, yeah. I almost brought Uncle Floyd in.
Really?
Yeah, go ahead.
That guy is the best. But I started doing these open mics where you go to a comedy club and you're trying out jokes in front of other comics or other people, you know. And I was at this place called Gotham Comedy Club in New York.
Oh, I know that.
I was doing an open mic there when I got a call from my brother that my mom was in the hospital.
Oh.
So I went there and she got recovered from that, went down a few more, was good for a few more months, then she passed away.
Oh, sorry.
And that was in October of 2003.
Oh,
and she was only 65.
Oh, sorry.
And then my dad was heartbroken by that, and he did not want to go on, and he just basically drank himself to getting cirrhosis of the liver, and then he died that February.
Sorry.
So that was horrible, obviously, you know. And what was the interesting thing about it was, obviously, and everybody was very nice there. Everyone was very kind about it, you know, coming to me. I couldn't have been nicer, you know. But a lot of that time is a fog, obviously, you know. But you start learning things about other people, too, that you didn't really know. Like, I had friends of mine that, some of them I did know, but that grew up without a father their whole life or without a mom their whole life, you know. And you know, or dealt with divorce, which my wife has dealt with, where her parents were divorced. My parents were married my whole lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I feel like I was very lucky to have them for as long as I did, because I had a beautiful childhood and I was, it was just a rough, very rough, obviously very hard time.
Sure.
You know, more so for my brother, because he had been in an argument with my mother at the time.
Oh.
And he felt like he never could, you know, get that forgiveness thing there. But now his whole life is a real story that should be made into a movie. He's phenomenal, and my mom would love him, everything the way he's done with his life. But that was my hardest time. And my thing was, for me too, at that time, I didn't know if I really wanted to continue doing the acting. So, to be honest with you, a lot of it was doing it with my brother. I enjoyed doing everything with my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And we made short films. We got into festivals and everything like that, film festivals. And then that's why when I started doing stand-up comedy and stuff, it's very lonely doing that. I liked having a partner to work with.
Yeah,
you know?
It's nice to work off someone.
Yeah, and so then when I started doing stuff without him, I started, you know, I made this one short film that went in. There's a place, this festival called the Garden State Film Festival in Asbury Park, and they loved this short I had done called The Door Walker, and it actually won an award there.
So we are gonna, and I talked to Angel about that,
okay.
Doing a short. You know, here.
Yes, I would love to do one here, right?
Yes.
So it's real quick, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No,
but
yeah.
Arbor is a sponsor, one of the sponsors for this Garden State Film Festival. And Phil,
I'll be there next year.
Yeah. My buddy Phil did a film with some of the seniors. It was more like an advertisement for the community, but it was like 3 or 4 minutes and they showed it at the festival. It was really well done. And I was like, I want to do something like that with you guys.
Yeah.
Here. You know, if we could do that,
yes,
that'd be fun.
Yes, we could do that.
We are going to
do that. And
yeah.
Something that we're going to talk about.
Awesome, awesome.
So would you say that your parents' passing made you more grateful, or it made you just a stronger person? In what way?
You know, I guess it's one of these things where it's like,
both?
I guess a little bit of both, I guess. I was going to say, I almost really didn't want to go on with acting because I felt like I loved entertaining them and they weren't there. And it was
right.
Like for them to not be around for everything, I was kind of like, you know, it was pretty interesting, I feel like.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
know.
Okay.
But I feel like I've always had the drive to do it. I've always had the drive to... you know, want to make people laugh and
mm-hmm.
do stupid things. And, you know, I just think, you know, I don't know how to describe it. So, yeah, I feel like that did. But, you know, it's a lot of up and down, the whole as everybody has
sure.
in their life. It's
sure
like
thing.
Anything else. It's like a lot of, you know, and I've always had a lot of people talk to me, you should go out west, you should go to Hollywood, you should go to California. It's different than here. You know.
Yeah.
And I never wanted to move away from my brother was the thing. So I kind of held on here. And then now it seems like there's so much more. There is a lot of TV and film that does shoot
that
here. So
yeah,
I'm like,
there's a lot going on
I
here.
Can, you know, I'm still trying to get out there and do that. But yeah.
Well, you're doing it. So
that's
good.
Yeah, we're doing it. Yeah.
What are you most proud of? And probably in December it'll be your baby.
Yes. Yes, probably.
But for now, up until now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a tough thing because I feel like I've done a lot of fun things with the acting stuff or things like that. I feel like it's, I guess if I had to say any one thing, it would be, you know, some of the. It's funny. It's hard to pick one specific thing, but I feel like it's something like The Door Walker, something like some of the shorts I've done, some of the sketches or theater stuff.
Your work,
it's really, you know, because a lot of it is just the people you work with. It's like I always feel like if the people that you worked with, I always feel like that's more important to me than, I mean, obviously I want the people to be happy, but it's like the people work with, if they look at you like you did a good job and you're good at what you do, that makes you feel good.
To be affirming,
good, you know?
Right? I mean, yes, absolutely. I get that.
I don't know if I could pick one specific thing, but yeah, I mean, I'm happy with a lot of stuff I've done. I've got some regrets with things I do. I'd like to do differently, but
what's your biggest regret? That was one of my questions. What is your biggest regret? And is it work-related? Well, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, no. I would say, I was going to say real quick that I was in this series of like one-act plays in Montclair, and I was also trying to seek out to get a lot of extra work. This is like a small example. This is the first thing that came into my head anyway. There was this show on TV called Mad Men.
Oh, yeah, I love Mad Men.
And I had been working with this agency in the city that you paid them monthly, $40, I think it was, and they would get you work, you know? So
it's a good deal.
They called me one day and said, there's an opportunity for you to be a featured extra
on
Mad Men. And it was shooting Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And the thing when you do extra work is the days are long and you don't know when you're going to go home. So a lot of extra work is you have to be there at like 5, 6 in the morning, and you might be there till 11, 12 at night. You know?
Yeah, you don't know.
Because it takes hours to set up the lighting and do it. It's amazing how much time it takes to shoot like 2 minutes of film. When you go to, it's amazing anything gets done. I don't know how it gets done, really.
Yeah.
But I said, I talked to few of my friends, I was talking to different people, and I said, you know, I called them and I said, I can't do it because I have a Friday night. That Friday night, I had a show, and I didn't want to miss the show that was paying me $50 for the show when this was going to pay $1,800.
Oh, shoot.
But I felt like we already had performed one weekend, we had a second weekend, and I didn't want to let them down.
Oh.
So I decided not to do that, and I feel like I missed a good opportunity there. You know, it's stupid things like that
that's actually
miss,
a learning experience.
So
if that were to happen again, what would you do? Because you had to have a backup, right? Was there somebody that could have done your part?
Well, the thing is, see, that's,
understudy?
Another study, right. That's what I was about to bring up. So a lot of times if they are, you know, this was before I was in the union. We did these one-act plays at a bar in Montclair, and they went over very well. They were a lot of fun. Some of them were original. Some of them were written by professional people. But it was we don't have any understudies for that.
No,
so
okay.
If I didn't go, they could have. In my opinion, I should have gambled. I should have rolled the dice there because they were shooting Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But they might not have needed me Friday.
Friday.
I didn't know back in time, I'm like, I should have took a shot there and said, hey, if they have to cancel the show, they cancel the show.
Yeah.
Or just skip my scenes. I was only in everybody those. One act plays, you're not in all of them. We would do 8 of them and you're in 2 of them, you know what I mean? So they could have just skipped those. That would have been bad for the other actors, but.
Right, well.
But you live and you learn, as you say.
That's it, yeah. I mean, you know, what's meant to be will be. What is the funniest thing that ever happened to you?
Funniest thing?
It doesn't have to be work either. It could be whatever, just something funny.
When I was at college, we did Of Mice and Men, the play Of Mice and Men. And I played the old man, Candy. He has the broken arm. I don't know. It's been a while. I know. But in the play, or in the book and everything, it's about George and Lenny. Lenny's the big dumb guy. He accidentally kills the girl in the story. And I have to come on stage as my character. At one point, the only person on the stage is the dead body. And I come on stage, and I have to see the dead body. And, you know, react to this. And then I have to call into the wings to call the other guys in. Hey, George, everybody else, you know. But in a lot of theater, I mean, unprofessionally, especially when you're young, we were in college, some of them will do some pranks on you now and then, you know? So when I went to go tell the gang about the dead body, I see the dead body, and I look over here. Do you ever hear the expression mooning? Well, there was a lineup of my friends mooning me. On this. So I'm over here and I'm over here. And now, instead of calling out like this, I'm turning my back to the audience, which you're not supposed to do at this moment, because I had to do something because they were going to see me laugh. I was like, what are we doing here, you know? So that was pretty funny.
They mooned you. Yeah. That's funny.
You never know what's going to happen, I guess. Live theater, as they say.
That's funny. Live theater must have been fun to do. So what's a memory that always makes you smile? Is that it?
A memory that always makes me smile. Mm-hmm. I mean, in
all
general?
Over the board. Yeah, this is in general.
I'll tell you this. This might sound a little corny here to you guys, but...
Corny's good.
Corny's good.
Corny.
I don't know if I told Luis the story, because we talk about movies a lot, but I... my parents, as I told you guys, they raised us on all the old movies. So I knew all these actors that a lot of people of my age at the time didn't really know, because my parents were older people. Like, they had us later in life, you know what I mean? So that's why I love jazz so much. I love the swing era. I love, you know, I listened to Benny Goodman and, you know, Count Basie. I don't know who Taylor Swift is. I mean, I know who she is, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you know. So I was in college, believe it or not. I had never seen It's a Wonderful Life. And I was in college, and I sat and I watched it by myself. And my mom's big movie was Miracle on 34th Street for Christmas, which I knew, which we watched. But they had never shown us this movie, you know? So I watched the movie by myself in my college dorm, and I was bawling, crying. But it was the happiest cry I ever had in my life. I was like, this movie is the most beautiful movie I've ever seen in my life. And I called my mom, and I said, Mom, how the... did you never show us this movie? You know, like, I couldn't believe that, you know? I am a crier at movies. I don't know if you are or not, but
That's funny.
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, I'm a big movie buff, so I get emotional with things like that. Right. That'll hit me.
We're lucky to have you here with us at Arbor for now.
Thank you. But it's funny. I was going to say real quick that you mentioned this before, that I never realized how much of this would be
transferable.
Yeah, because I came here to be a driver, and they had me on, and then they said, well, aside from driving, you're going to help out with engagement. And I was like, okay, and then I started doing it, and I love doing it. I love being with you guys and hanging out with you guys. Everyone's so very nice to me and very, very fun, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we know, look, just from judging from the size of the audience, how much they love you, too.
Yeah, no,
so
that's great.
It's great. It's wonderful. You're great at your role here. We love you here.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. We'll miss you. Brian will be gone for a couple of weeks.
Couple
3 weeks.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's very nice.
Go
and
enjoy your baby.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you guys for coming out and learning about Brian.
Thank you for coming out, Brian. Thank you.
Yeah. So this was a lot of fun.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
The only I've known and in common except thank you. You know, it's interesting to come into something where there's not only residents but people that work here. There's so many women that work here, you know, and there's so many women that are here,
women
you know,
dominated.
And I feel like, it's a very, you know, for me to be a guy, I feel like that's very helpful to me working here, but I feel like, I feel like you guys don't look at it like that with me. I feel like you're always very, very kind to me, and I don't know, I just want to say thank you for that.
I think you get what you give. I think you get what you give, and you're very kind.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. Are you or someone you love exploring senior living options? The Arbor Company proudly operates over 50 senior living communities across 11 states along the East Coast and Midwest. We offer a range of lifestyles, including independent living, assisted living, bridges, and memory care, each designed to support seniors in living their best lives. To learn more or find an Arbor community near you, visit us online at www.arborcompany.com. Or if you happen to be in the Norwood, New Jersey area, we'd love to welcome you in person. Give us a call at 201-768-0208 and ask to schedule a tour. We can't wait to show you what makes our community so special.